Good morning. Just a couple announcements. The LCUUC Time, Talent, and Treasure fundraising auction starts today and runs through the 23rd. There is a wonderful collection of handmade items, services, and events to bid on. You are also welcome to bid during the week if you happen to be here. New this year is a weekly raffle, which you saw as you came in this morning. Each week, one item will be raffled off during the coffee hour. This week, we are raffling a basket of homemade edibles made by our own members. If you did not get the opportunity to purchase tickets before the service, they will be available for sale in the social hall after the service. It is not too late to donate something for this auction. There are forms in the social hall, or see Lynn Smith. Today's order of service includes announcements of other upcoming events and other upcoming church activities, and we hope everyone joins in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, check our webpage at lcuuc.org and like and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment at this point to silence your communicators. Yep, it's off. And thank you for being here. Thank you.
We have inherited a world that isn't perfect. It's not possible to carry around the weight of all that we do in our lives, plus the burden of all that has come before us. If we want to change the world for the better, if we want to be our better selves, in the words of Lois Van Veer, we have to let go. She says, let go of all that binds you. Let go of all that burdens you. Let go of what you carry, of what shames you, of fear, of trespass and transgression, of woundedness. Let go of guilt. Let go of anger. Let go of small-mindedness and pettiness, of ways of being that don't work for you anymore, of compulsions that consume your living time. Let go of what you cannot change. Let go of regret. Let go of what haunts you. Let go of pain. Let go of the ways you miss the mark. Let go. So welcome to this place where letting go is always okay. Come and let us worship here together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your neighbor.
We light our chalice, symbol of our faith, for truth, sought through a questioning heart and an attentive mind, and for love, pursued through obstacles inside and outside our own human heart, and for forgiveness and all it entails, the place where truth and love meet and merge. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 151 in the gray hymnal, I Wish I Knew How. Thank you. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to bring a message of hope and grace to an imperfect world. My name is Sue Andrews, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. Just a moment ago, Reverend Amy said, "Welcome into this place where letting go is always okay." It is okay because we are all welcome here. No matter who you are or where you come from, you are welcome here. We come with our duffels full of regret, our secret satchels of pain, our backpacks of guilt, and nonetheless, we are welcome here. We are a UUA recognized welcoming congregation, which means that we particularly welcome those who have known exclusion and disdain for their presentations of gender or because of whom they love. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in the social hall after the service. And while you're there, find out more about LCUUC. We are so very glad you have chosen to be here today to celebrate and to worship with us.
This one fits more with the theme about being tougher than you think you are, about finding some hope in the depths of the hard times. I wrote this one in 2002, and I'm happy to say I don't feel the way I felt when I wrote this song. But, I suspect if you're over 40, you've known some hard times and had some tough losses and faced some dark nights of the soul. So if you're currently in that place, this one's particularly for you. For those of you who've been there, we all know we'll go back, so... The verses are the just drag you into the muck, so I will sing those. And then I'm thinking if on the choruses you would all join in, then as a community we would help get each other out of the muck, which is what I hope we do for each other as a community anyway. So the words of the chorus are, some of you have heard this one before, "Here's the heart still hoping after the well runs dry. Here's to finding faith when you're out of reasons why. Here's to holding on when you wanted to let go. Here's to hearts still hoping. Here's to hearts made whole." It's not like a hole in your heart, but it's like whole with a W, like your whole made full. So, excuse me, your heart made full. Here we go. I'll sing the chorus first so you can catch up. Here's to hearts still hoping after the well runs dry. Here's to finding faith when you're out of reasons why. Here's to holding on when you wanted to let go. Here's to hearts still hoping. Here's to hearts made whole. The news is mostly bad. Much we can do. We live our lives mostly day to day. Make a difference where we may. Here's the heart still open after the well runs dry. Here's the finding faith when you're out of reasons why. Here's to holding on when you want to let go. Here's to hearts still whole. Here's to hearts made whole. Death will steal your innocence faded love tears you apart. Hard times, they take their toll, leave a cold, busted heart. Still you rise and face the day, make some new love where we may. Here's to hearts still open after the well runs dry. Here's to find faith when you're out of reasons why. Here's to holding on when you want to let go. Here's to hearts still open, here's to hearts made whole. I've seen that bright light fade away, been down the blackest hole. Damned in my own emptiness, nearly lost my soul. Look without and look within. Find the grace to begin again. Here's to hearts still open after the well runs dry. Here's to find faith when you're out of reasons why. Here's to holding on when you want to let go. Here's to hearts still open, here's to hearts made whole. Here's to hearts still open, here's to hearts still open. Hearts
made. One of the ways that we provide hope for the community around us is by donating to the food pantries, both non-perishable food items and financially. So if you've brought a food item to share today, please bring it forward or have a child bring it forward. And I'd like to ask all the children to come forward for a story. And today, Bud and Sarah Hudson are going to share with us their experience with their kids in living below the line.
Good morning, all of you. Thanks for coming up. I don't have a typical kind of book to read to you today. Instead, I have a story about what our family did a long time ago. A story about us when we both had brown hair and our kids were living at home. We have three kids. Peter was in sixth grade, David was in fourth grade, and Heidi was in second grade. And that Sunday in church, our minister asked us if we would all be interested in trying to help out some people in the world by giving money to One Great Hour of Sharing. Maybe some of you have heard of that. UNICEF does something similar. And, well, we thought about it because, you know, there are a lot of people in this world here who live below the line. In other words, they don't have enough to eat. They don't have shelter around the world. And so we thought, well, we'd really like to try something like that, but we also knew that we didn't have a lot of extra money. So on the way home, Bud and I had an idea. We thought, okay, how about if we ask the kids, if we give them each $1 a day, could they buy food for a week with $7? I see somebody's all excited already about that.
And so, by the way, we only had $1 each, too.
That's right. It was all of us. So, and then the money that we saved from that, we would put into the One Great Hour of Sharing box. So we got home and we asked them, and they said, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Can we buy our own food? Can we choose what we want to have to eat?
And then I, of course, a professor of nutrition, thought, do they really understand the RDA? Do they know about proteins and vitamins? But I was willing to take the chance.
And we figured it's only for 1 week anyway. It will be a good experiment for us to see how it feels to maybe eat on a lot less money than we normally ate on. So we asked them, and they said yes, they'd love to do it. And we said, okay, you can buy your own food. Let's take pencils, paper, and go to the store together, and we can all get a grocery cart, and you can figure out what it is you would like to eat. You can eat separately. You can just pick out your own food, or you can go together and, you know, work it that way.
So let's ask the question for you. How many of you would like to buy your own food for a week? Put your hands up.
Well, we see some hands up. Oh, good. Hey.
Good.
So they were excited about it, too, and we got to the grocery store, and they each got a cart. And before we knew it, we saw Peter, David, and Heidi in one aisle together. They were talking about pooling their money. Go ahead. Did you want to say something? Okay. Would you put them down, please? Anyway, so here are the boys and Heidi in one aisle by the cereal. Well, we would not allow them to have sugar cereal. Does that sound familiar? Does that happen at your house, too? Maybe you can't have sugar. Well, so they decided to buy sugar cereal, okay? And they pooled their money. They bought 3 big boxes of sugar cereal. They bought milk, but not this kind of milk. They bought powdered milk, so they'd have money left over. And then they would mix the powder with water, of course. So, and they bought a few other things, like bananas and crackers. And guess what else they bought? Any idea? Yeah. What? Donuts? No, but close. What were you going to say? No, they bought a great big candy bar because they figured that at the end of their meals, the one probably at supper time, they would have something for dessert. So that, you know, we kind of shook our heads, and we weren't really watching them then. We only saw them at checkout. Anyway, I was all excited because for me, I knew what I wanted to buy, and I did not want to have to cook that week except for to boil some eggs. So I bought a dozen eggs. I bought coffee, because I love coffee. I bought apples. I bought, let's see, what else was it? Carrots and bread and peanut butter. Those were the things I bought. What did you buy, Bud?
Well, first of all, let me point out that I wasn't used to cooking. So I saw this as a rare opportunity. But also as a nutritionist, I wanted to get good nutrients. So the two favorite soups that I made that my kids still remind me about because they can still remember it was soup from chicken necks and secondly from fish heads. I know. That's the way they responded.
That's exactly what they say. They can still remember the smell. We talked to all of them this week and wanted some highlights on what they remembered. And yeah.
So I think the point is you can be as creative as you want, kids, okay, and adults, as you approach this exciting venture and temptation.
And why are we doing this? Well, we're doing this because we know that there are a billion people in our world, and we'll talk about this a little more in Sunday school, And we know they all eat different things. If they are lucky enough to be eating a lot of things, they don't have much money. So we would like to, we can read about it, we can turn on TV, we can see what it's like, but we want to do something a little bit more than that. We want to try it ourselves. We want to just have a dollar and a half a day, and these are our packets. Bud has a dollar and a half. I have a dollar and a half every day, so we have $7.50 in here. You'll have the same amount, each one of you, if you do this, and you'll go to the store with your family, and you'll buy some of the things that we have in here, and you'll find out that at the end of the day, I mean, you may have food that will make your tummies full, but you may have picked cereal like our kids did, and they were pretty hungry at the end of the day. They didn't have that luxury. I know when we did it years later, we did it again when they were in track and cross country and all the sports that they were in, and they picked differently. They did not pick sugar cereal at that point. So the reason we're doing it is to understand and have empathy with the people who are living like this every day and think we only have it 5 days. So in Sunday school today, we'll be making little boxes. And the money that we save from the budget that we normally spend for food a week, and you'll have to ask your mom and dads about this, we will put the money in this little box that you're going to decorate in Sunday school today, and then we'll be giving it to Heifer International. So you'll be able to pick the animals that you want to support also. So we'll hear much more about that.
Let's emphasize that this invite is to everyone, okay? And even if you don't have any kids up in front here, you are invited to participate. And we also have a sheet that you can fill out on a daily basis, what you ate, and how much it costs. And those are all available at the table in the RE room.
Now, there are a few things in our basket we'd like to share so that it gives you some ideas. So why don't you all come up and pick one thing out of the basket and just hold it up so the congregation to see what we're eating this week. So we have 10 apples, we have cereal, we have orange juice, one stick of butter, coffee. I couldn't live without coffee. Bud needed some. You can pick that up. Okay, tortillas. We have tortillas. Turn around and show the people what. Show your parents. We have some soup stock, and we have carrots in the garden. And so I'm estimating how much it cost us, probably the seed packet, to have carrots. We have many more than this, so we're going to make soup this week. And a staple and lots of protein, we have black beans that we're going to make for the tortillas. And we have spaghetti. And I think we're going to be pretty full, actually. And we have spaghetti sauce. So do you think this sounds like a great idea to give it a try, see how we feel? Because we will feel differently. And next week on Sunday, you're going to bring back your little box filled with the money that you saved for a heifer project. You get to pick the animals now in RE class.
Okay.
Is that it? Yeah.
Could I have my lantern bearer up here? Thank you so much for sharing with us today. I need him right now. There you go. Got that? May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. And if you would follow him to your classrooms, and if the rest of you would help me sing the children out. The song is called For You Shall Go Out, and the words are in your order of service.
Well, when we thought about doing this, I thought, why on earth are we doing it? And I think Sarah has kind of explained why we're doing it. But I still continue to ask that question. Then I came up with an answer. And that is we're trying to build empathy within each of us. Empathy to experience what someone else has to experience. And you can develop empathy in any number of ways. One is simply to talk to other people. How many of you have become, you think, more empathetic by simply talking to others? Raise your hands. Okay, secondly, you can also do it by listening to music or singing music. How many of you have become more empathetic through singing or listening to songs? And I hadn't really thought about that, but that indeed is true. Likewise, theater. You go to a theater, and what's one of the purposes of people who are putting on plays? To get you to understand other people. So we can develop empathy for others by going to plays or by actually being in plays. How many of you have ever been an actor and actress in a play? Raise your hands. Okay, keep your hands up if you felt you understood the character a little bit better because you had to play them. Okay, well, the hands staying up, that's good. You can also do it through music. And Greg, thank you for this morning's music. I think we all can become a little bit more empathetic in listening to the kind of music that we heard this morning and that we can hear throughout our world in many ways. But what really is empathy? It's feeling what another one is feeling, but we don't want to stop there. We want to do what is cited here in number two, the principle. One of the principles of you use is showing compassion to people. What's the difference between empathy and compassion? Action. Empathy is understanding. Right. Compassion is action. So we want to try and understand what it's like for people to be hungry, to have limited budgets, and therefore we're going to have that experience. But secondly, we want to be compassionate for those who are in need, and therefore our money is going to be going to a selected group that's concerned about others in the world. And in this particular case, this year, it will be Heifer International, and you will be able to choose what kind of animal will be purchased, donated, etc. So I think we're looking at the combination of becoming more empathetic, but of course being more compassionate too. But then as I look out at you people, I think I'm preaching to the choir. The church already is very empathetic, the members, and very compassionate. I think about the Hope Center, Haiti. Thank you, Rob Ayler.
Family Promise. We're all
thinking about Haiti now.
Family Promise.
Family Promise, weekly food donations, and many more. Thanks to all of you for being such inspirations to us as we all try and become more compassionate to those around our world. Thank you.
And we hope to see you next week in the sanctuary after the service with a bag lunch and talking about what it was like for you. So see you then, maybe. Bye-bye.
And if anyone has any questions about how to do the Living Below the Line project for the next 5 days, and again, we are asking, give it a try. Please talk to Bud and Sarah or to Chris Rollins or to Carrie Duma, and any of them can explain to you how this works. There's a website called Clients from Hell. And it's a place where freelance graphic designers tell the true stories of their worst experience ever. And one designer said, we were making leaflets for a local church. And the client wanted a logo designed with earth, being shielded by the almighty hand of God. So I did it, and I sent the client a proof, and shortly thereafter I got this call. We like it, but the hand looks too human. Would you please use a hand that looks more like God's? Now, personally, I think that hand would have looked just fine to all of us, because we know that human hands do divine work really well. In order that we can continue that work as a church, this morning's offering will now be given and received. Thank you all so much for everything that you have given and for everything that you do for the life and the work of this community. And one of the reasons we come together here in community is to share both our laughter and our tears. And we do this in several ways. Before the service, you're always welcome to silently light candles up here on the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud, and the worship associate lights candles for us. So would anyone who has a joy or a sadness to share, please raise your hand. One of the ushers will bring you a microphone.
I'd like to begin with a candle for the people of Haiti who are suffering again with more devastation and death.
Good morning, this is Alyssa. A candle of joy in memory of my great uncle who passed, and we're celebrating his life on Tuesday. Just an amazing man who served in World War II and then CIA for many years and built a library and a church in his community. Just an amazing, amazing person.
This is Phil. I also wanted to have a candle lit for the victims of Hurricane Matthew, especially in Haiti, like you said. And to let folks know that, if you don't know already, over 900 people have passed away, 350,000 are in need, and the UU Service Committee is asking for donations. To donate, you can visit their website, UUSC, and go from there. Thank you.
This is Tom, and my wife, Lori, is the minister of the UU congregation in Beaufort, South Carolina. And they had a hurricane there Thursday and Friday and yesterday as well. And the church is, it's my other church in some ways. And church is fine. All the members seem to be fine as far as we know. They're still all evacuated, so hopefully it'll be nothing more than all the down trees in that area.
This is Chris. Kristen, if you could light a candle both for my Aunt Patty, who entered into hospice this last week after 2.5 years battling cancer, and Greg's Uncle Bob, who passed away also from cancer this week.
Well, here's a... Can you hear me now? A joy that Brian made it through his surgery, not being too grumpy, is that correct? And a concern only that his pain will abate quickly.
Hi, this is Janice, and joy for our family just to have everyone together. Cal's home from China, and Julie's here from North Carolina. And we had all our family together for some weddings and birthdays and happy times.
Hi, this is Diane. I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but my granddaughter is taking rides at 5 a.m. with her husband in the semi-dark because she's ready to give birth. And so they see deer, and it's beautiful, and she's exclaiming, but there is no sleeping anymore.
We light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows, which we hold deeply, but which we have not spoken aloud here today.
If life is a play that is carried out on the world stage, then sometimes we have to consider that our total life experiences up to the present moment are only the first or second act. We have the ability to shape the next act. For those of us who have unresolved tensions with people who are living, the time is now to get to work towards healing. We can write the next act of our lives. Writing a successful next act requires a complete return to wholeness or integrity. This process includes saying, "I'm sorry," to others for wrongs we've committed toward them. And it includes granting forgiveness to others for their slights towards us. We say to God, "Salah lanu, mahal lanu, kaper lanu, forgive us, pardon us, grant us atonement." What we expect of God, we must also demand of ourselves. So, those of us giving free rent in our minds to the anger and resentment that we hold toward someone, we give ourselves a gift to evict those thoughts. Let's change the script from a tragedy to a story with a happier ending. If there are relatives or friends with whom there is unresolved tension, speak to them on Yom Kippur or immediately thereafter. Say that you've given thought to your relationship and want a fresh start. Each of us can raise the curtain on a new act. Here ends this morning's reading.
This one's called the Forgiveness Song. Just might fit in there. has hurt you. You've been betrayed, bruised and broken, made you afraid. You got your reasons for feeling bad, and you'd be justified to keep feeling bad. But maybe it's time for some serious soulful business. Maybe it's time for forgiveness. Family's founder, old wounds run deep. Lovers leave when the road gets steep. Friends let you down, old covenants fade. Even God falls short of those promises made. Maybe it's time for some serious soulful business. Maybe it's time for forgiveness.
Please join me in a moment of silent meditation or the spirit of prayer.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 93 in the gray hymnal, To Mercy, Pity, Peace, and Love.
I'm going to ask the obvious question. How many people in this room know who Garrison Keillor is? Why am I not surprised at that answer? Well, love him or hate him, Garrison Keillor created a cultural icon when he dreamed up the town of Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average. And it's so iconic, in fact, that there is a cognitive bias, a thing that our minds are preconditioned to do that is actually named after it, the Lake Wobegon effect. And the Lake Wobegon effect says that human beings, by nature, we tend to overestimate our own qualities and abilities relative to others in areas like intelligence and performance and the brilliance of our children, appearance and desirability, and we underestimate our own flaws. We do this personally, we do this for any group we belong to, the Lake Wobegon effect. And now when I say this, I'm watching faces and I can hear the wheels turning, as everyone goes, well, except for me, right? I mean, we're not talking about us. We wouldn't do that. But if you think about it, this bias, this innate bias toward our own abilities, it makes sense from a survival of the species standpoint. There's a reason our brains are programmed to do this. Thinking you are smarter or more attractive, more desirable, more capable than the people around you can give you that little ego boost you need to actually try something new. That little bit that you may need to succeed or to approach potential partners. It would have made members of a small band or tribe appear better to one another than those outside their tribe. But the downside to the Lake Wobegon effect is that it creates this disbelief, this fragility at times when our innate sense of betterness gets challenged. and our very human and realistic flaws are brought to light. And that's particularly meaningful right now for a couple of reasons. We are almost at the end of the Jewish days of awe. Yom Kippur is on Tuesday. That is the Day of Atonement, the day that you say, I'm sorry for anything you've done this year, and you move on. Theoretically, you go forth to sin no more. Realistically, not so much. That's why it comes around every year. At least that's the idea. The days of awe are the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and Yom Kippur. And they're supposed to be used for you to work these things out for yourself, to engage in a period of introspection and thought where you honestly assess what went wrong this year. What things could I have done better? This is not about assigning blame or terrible guilt to yourself. This is realism. What went wrong? What could I have done better? Who did I hurt, accidentally or deliberately? Again, this is not splashing mud on yourself. This is realism. And then once you've done the introspective piece, how do I fix it as best as I can? How do I make amends? How do I plan to make amends if it's something that I can't do right this minute? And then how do I let it go? You put it down, and you go on to make this year's mistakes because you are still human. Now, I know if I've done something wrong through my own behavior and my own choices, the period of introspection should lead me to identify what I did, even if I don't know how to fix it yet. I know that I hurt Bob's feelings. I know that I overcharged Steve or I shoved Matilda. I cheated Rick. In fact, the Lake Wobegon effect might lead me to think I'm a bigger sinner than I am. Because God knows you do everything in a big way. To overestimate my ability to impact others. But where introspection fails us, or where we fail at introspection, is when it concerns us as a tribe, when it's our people, or our group, or our gang, or our city who've caused the hurt, but not us personally. When it gets a little bigger than I pushed Steve. We're good when we have the power, the personal power, to say, oh, look, I scratched Matt's car. I'm sorry, Matt. I have the power to claim that. I'm good with that. It gives me an illusion of some kind of control. But when somebody says to me, a group you're part of, Unitarian Universalists, white people, middle-class people, middle-aged people, doesn't matter what group, when they tell me it's my group that's done something, not me, that's where that fragility comes into play, that breakable sense of self, and it starts to crackle a little alarmingly. It's where I find myself saying, wait a minute, my people aren't bad people. My group is a good group. How can you just say we did something not good? Are you saying we're bad people? It's a gut level reaction. We're good people, right? Because I know I didn't do it. I know Matt didn't do it. And I know Chris didn't do it. Yom Kippur says to us, stop right there. Stop in that moment of porcelain, fine fragility, and consider this. It is your imperfections, personal or as a group, that let you have the chance to be a good person. And let me rephrase that. It's the breaks that let the light in, if you're a Leonard Cohen fan. If I am trapped alone on a desert island with no other living thing and only plants around me, it is really easy to say, my, aren't I a fine person? I have not gotten angry at one other human being this week. I haven't yelled at anyone. I have not killed another loving thing to eat. I am amazing. It is easy to say that when you are the only one there. But most of us spend our lives surrounded by others. And it's our response to those others. It's our response when we find out that our group, our people, need to make amends for something that helps to define us. Our congregation this year has made economic justice a social justice priority. And we've started doing good work around economic inequality in our country and in our area. We've had some great classes. We've joined the movement to fight for 15 minimum wage. We see that there is a problem with wealth distribution in our country, and we're trying to do some things about it, even if we're starting small. Where I have always struggled is that moment where I know I'm doing good things, where I know that I am not being unfair to anyone or actively oppressing anyone, and then someone comes along and says to me, not, congratulations, great job, thanks for all the hard work, but instead has the guts to say to me, I wish you would do more. You owe it to people, you know. You can practically hear my fragile little ego crackling in that moment. What do you mean? I owe someone something more. Can't you see I'm being wonderful? Lake Wobegon effect. Can't you see I'm being good? Can't you see how good I am? It's no stranger in my life. On Yom Kippur, one of the stories that we read traditionally is the story of Jonah. And his self-concept got a little damaged too. I understand poor Jonah. I can feel for him. He was just hanging about, not bothering anyone. And here comes some local Hebrew god who said to him, get up, get up right now and go to Nineveh because they need social justice there. They're screwing it all up. And tell them I said to stop oppressing people. And that's what it boiled down to. Get up. Go, tell him to stop. And Jonah wasn't very happy about this because he wasn't oppressing anybody. He wasn't bothering a soul. He listened politely to what the Hebrew God had to say, and then he packed a bag and ran as fast as he could in the absolute opposite direction, literally. He was scared. He didn't know why him. He didn't know why anybody would have felt he owed it to those people in Nineveh. He didn't know if the people there would ignore him or throw him in jail or hurt him. He didn't know what to do. When someone else points out a flaw in our system, maybe one we didn't see with our own introspection, it's understandable that our first reaction is to go and to head in the opposite direction as quickly as we can. Because we have no power over that. This isn't me scratching Matt's car with the key. I didn't find it. I can't stop it. I can't fix it. My porcelain gets a little crackly. it's understandable that our first reaction is, why do I have to apologize for this thing or to make amends? I'm innocent. It's not my fault. And we even get back to, are you saying my people are bad people? No. No one is. But we are the inheritors of an imbalanced system, one that has benefited many of us in multiple ways. And like Jonah, we're hearing about problems that seem so big, so distant, and so not of our own making that the only thing to do is run or at least walk rapidly in the other direction, to give in to that fragility that says if we admit there's a problem, we are somehow less. But again, it's our imperfections that let us show the very best of ourselves. Right now, economic inequality is more profound in America than it has been at any time since the Great Depression. The gap between the top 1% and the rest of us has never been so wide. When Jonah ran from God, he was running from a problem about this big. Didn't have a car, so he got on a boat. And he heaved a huge sigh of relief, and according to the story, he went to bed so that he could stop thinking about it. But the divine wasn't quite done with him. According to the Old Testament, God caused a storm, and the boat started to rock and take on water. And the sailors ran and started to dump precious cargo to keep the boat from going down until finally the aggravated captain went to look for their annoying passenger and literally found him snoring in the deepest hold of the boat. And when he found him, he didn't mince words. He woke him up. And for many of you who remember last week, Jonah got woke as abruptly as is humanly possible. The captain said to him, "We are up here fighting for our lives, and you are snoring. You are sound asleep. You are sound asleep." Here at Yom Kippur, it's time to get woke. It's time to wake up and get out of the bottom of the boat. People are fighting to make a living, to feed and clothe and house themselves, and their ship is sinking. And this is our chance to show the best of ourselves because we have it in us. We won't break. We won't crack and crumple from the strain of hearing that there is a problem. We won't break when we hear that the problem is caused by a system of which we are a part and which we accidentally or deliberately support in a thousand different ways. Like Jonah, we didn't do this. It's not our fault, but it is our responsibility. And I'll say that again, it's not your fault. It's not our fault, but it's our responsibility. It's our chance to let the light shine through. It's our chance to be our best selves, our purest selves, by recognizing that we can see the parts of our system that are soiled and twisted and broken. We can recognize the damage, and rather than sinking under some kind of burden of guilt, we can just decide to make things better. We can raise the curtain on the next act, and it can look totally different. We're allowed to do that. Jonah wasn't a great leader. He wasn't an amazing prophet. When the captain woke him up, the sailors actually threw him overboard into the ocean. He was an aggravating schmuck. He was swallowed by a large fish, and he was so stubborn that he sat inside for 3 days, still arguing with his overmind, with the divine, with his conscience. Before he finally said, "All right, I'll do it. I'll go to Nineveh. I'll tell them anything you want. Just get me out of this fish." And the fish spat him out, and he sulked his way into the city, and he gave him the message. He wasn't happy. He wasn't particularly good at it. He was resentful and angry, and he did it anyway. And Nineveh changed. The people started to work together, and when enough of them were fighting the inequalities of that system, the king actually decided he would follow their lead, and the laws were changed. because of that angry, sulky guy who smelt like a fish and spoke badly. A kingdom was saved. God didn't show up. No divine voice came down from the heavens. A man went there and said, "You got to stop. You are incredibly strong. You can see injustice and work to end it without fracturing under the weight of needless guilt. You don't have to apologize for the systems those before you built, but you need to take responsibility for their destruction in any way you see fit. Begin in small ways and look for the places to let the light shine through. Bud and Sarah told you today about living below the line. Consider beginning with at least trying a week of seeing what it feels like to live in that kind of poverty. And donate the money you save. It's one line of light. Engage in introspection. Examine the problem so that you, like Jonah, can wake up from that nap and move forward. Because, you know, Lake Wobegon is a lovely place. But it's time to wake up and come home. Amen.
We extinguish this chalice and we go forward. May we always remember our own strength, power, and beauty. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 1000 in the teal hymnal, "Morning Has Come."
Thank you.
Blessed is all that has kept us alive, growing and changing this year. Go out and know that you have the strength and power to change your world. Peace, and may it be so.